this week in the markets, U.S. shares blasted higher on solid domestic economic numbers. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzik here. Season 14, episode 689. It's a pleasure to have you back with us with two more big guest interviews. Starting us up this week, Martin Armstrong, the forecaster, rejoins the show. He says tangible assets will survive. Paper assets will evaporate. Well, just music to the ears of precious metals aficionados. He sees a perfect storm brewing in the EU, and we saw signs of that in the currency market this week with the US dollar blasting higher. Investors clearly exiting euros, not really excited about all the Brexit drama with another failed vote this week. In fact, he's so excited about the precious metals because he thinks investors and institutions alike will scramble for the exits, leaving far too few gold life jackets for everyone on board. Then Trends Research Institute, Gerald Celente, one of our favorite mentors for over a decade now, rejoins the show with more solid input on the gold sector. Now that the Fed has officially ended its rate hike cycle, it's time for the next gold bull market leg, according to my guest. We might even see an assault on the $2,000 yellow metal level. And we also discuss the Ganesha Project. That's right, Signal Hunters. That's my side project here. He supports the idea that it's very likely there could be life off our terra firma here. He notes that they're finding human skulls that are showing carbon dating of millions of years. Just one more sign, there could be evidence of life throughout the universe. If you haven't been over to the Signal Hunters website, stop by, please. It's free for now. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, or at least entertained, by what we found just this week alone, let alone the last 3 months. Really exciting times, I think, ahead for the human race. Don't forget, for a limited time, I'm not sure if you'll still have a chance here, but be sure and get over to One Gold website. We have links everywhere for you there. You can still pick up, as far as I know, a free $5 in digital bullion. Remember to click the Gold Seek Radio option there when you sign up. And the Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, extension number 514049. Please jot it down or plug it right into your mobile or home phone. 641-715-3900, 514049 is the mailbox number again. And we'd like to field your questions and comments. You can call 24/7. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear editorial. GoldSeek.com begins now with a market weather recap. Partly cloudy weather appeared over the precious metals this week as U.S. investors preferred the U.S. dollar on continued Brexit-related issues in the eurozone. At Friday's closing bell, the precious metals indices finished with the yellow metal down $14, finishing right around $1,300, that level we've been monitoring for some time. Silver, though, backed off a little more sharply, ending at $15.11, while the XAU precious metal shares finished around $76. Black gold, though, bucked the trend, picking up 2% over a dollar, finishing at 60, just in a really solid uptrend along with the U.S. dollar off its lows. In fact, higher by nearly 50% from just a few months earlier. The top story driving the markets this week, news of weaker than expected U.S. consumer spending colluded with sluggish household income numbers, which may have contributed to a decline in domestic economic output. But it wasn't enough to sour investors on the U.S. dollar, which soared to a multi-week high. Gross domestic product climbed at a pace of 2.2%, a little less than the 2.6% estimate expected by economists, but off any recessionary numbers, to the dismay of many perma-bear analysts. Clearly, investors are clamoring for the U.S. dollar relative to euro and related assets amid the Brexit issues that I referred to earlier, as Britain attempts to sever its ties with the large European trade bloc. Bottom line on precious metals. Clearly, the U.S. dollar continues to dominate the commodities sector, with the exception, though, this week of black gold. That's the lifeblood of the global economy, which still remains relatively strong. The technical picture for the greenback is, as I said, really solid here, suggesting that we could see a healthy consolidation and perhaps even a reaction in the precious metals in the coming weeks. And hopefully that will give latecomers an opportunity to accumulate discounted shares and bullion at bargain prices in the coming weeks and months ahead. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange this week as investors continue to purchase U.S. shares in part on expectations of a diplomatic resolution to the trade war. By Friday's closing bell on Wall Street, the Dow was up 426 points, 1.5% at 25, just shy of 26,000. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 at 2834 and the NASDAQ added 87, 1% at 77.29, about 50% over its year 2000 peak. Well, in related geoeconomic news, the British Parliament rejected Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal for the third time, raising the possibility of a more chaotic exit from the EU, according to one media report. Elsewhere, the cold trade war conflict between the U.S. and its largest trading partner might have inched a bit closer to an amicable solution on news that China's diplomats hinted at concessions on issues such as intellectual property rights, which had been a sticking point in the past. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin early Friday noted that talks in China were constructive and would continue in Washington, D.C., noted one report. Jim Cramer, our favorite stock pundit and Wall Street guru, is a big fan of an IPO, the Lyft IPO. The chart looks somewhat solid, although it's a bit volatile. Maybe for the risk inclined, this might have an interesting beta boost to a portfolio. U.S. shares, bottom line. The USA Today Greed to Fear Index remains in a somewhat neutral position, so the markets have cooled off just a touch. This, of course, is a positive perspective. And the technical position is extremely solid. We had that reaction that we were looking for after a stellar rally, so hopefully we'll be building up momentum for the next assault on fresh highs in U.S. equities sometime in 2019. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Today says the European Central Bank is at risk of failing, which could send interest rates soaring, outlines contingency plans for investors to shield their portfolios. Martin Armstrong, author of The Greatest Bull Market in History, Economic Confidence Model, and founder of Princeton Economics. Welcome back, Martin Armstrong.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Tons of articles on this. Oh, it's reflecting there's a recession coming, etc. You know, this is the problem when people only look at things domestically. You have to understand what's happening internationally. I mean, you've got gold crashing today, you got the euro crashing today, dollar going up. What is going on? Why is this, you know, people don't realize that. I mean, I've spoke to three, you know, dealing desks today. There is such a bid for the dollar. Everybody's trying to buy 90-day paper. There's nothing available left, period. There's no offers. Why? Because what's happening is, you just look at Turkey. You know, he basically, the central bank there shut down everybody yesterday. And so when people start selling, so what did they do? Oh, well, they put in capital controls. They shut down the repo market. So they trapped investors. So the stock market there starts crashing, etc. And then this sends concerns rippling through the marketplace everywhere. They did, well, what if Brazil does this? You're looking at capital controls. This is why the yield curve has gone ballistic just right now. And it's this no, you know, nobody wants to sell U.S. paper. They're just, everybody's holding on to it. We have a profound financial crisis that's just sitting here on the edge. And people don't understand what's happening here. The European banks, because you've had all this quantitative easing for 10 years and negative interest rates, the banks don't want to pay negative interest rates, just parking money at the ECB. So they have lent money tremendously into real estate to get some sort of yield. Then, particularly the Spanish banks, more than anybody, they've been buying Turkish debt because the theory is that, oh, well, the IMF will bail out anybody, so there's really no risk. And it's just not true. So they have all this emerging market debt. And then three, to avoid the negative interest rates at the ECB, they've been lending to each other. So there is nothing but a huge liquidity crisis. And by May, they're going to have to, you know, deal with reporting there's Basel III stuff with capitalization. If they don't have liquidity, we're looking at a European banking crisis developing, and I've been warning about this, that this is serious. And it's like the perfect storm that is coming together here. And are there banking crises that develop? It's a liquidity crisis, because they're lending money on real estate, so that's longer term. They can't call in those loans, so if somebody wants to withdraw money from the bank, they can't get their hands on it to give it to the depositor. Then you have this emerging market debt. So they all ran into there to get the higher yield, and now you have countries like Turkey putting in a capital control, and you can't get the money out. So, and then they've all lent money to each other, and they're all in trouble. So where does the money come from? And this is why you have the euro crashing. It's complete chaos going on out here. Really, it's chaos.
Do you suppose that part of this is the change in the central bankers' forward guidance? I mean, the Fed has just, you know, obviously announced the end of its rate, you know, hiking cycle, and now the EU and many of their colleagues are talking about higher rates. Is that the wrench that's been thrown into the works that has everyone upset?
Well, the Fed, I can tell you, because I mean I've been in quite a few meetings, and there is a concern that now they're beginning to realize that, and the topic has been, okay, fine, how do we prevent the dollar from being the reserve currency? Because what's happened is the Fed was raising interest rates. Then you had the IMF, ECB, everybody else saying, please don't do that. You raise interest rates and it hurts us. So then the Fed is like, yeah, but we have to worry about our domestic economy. You know, we shouldn't be worrying about you. And so they get all this lobbying in here, and then the Fed basically has to back off, because if it keeps moving interest rates higher domestically, where our economy is doing better, then, you know, they cause a crisis elsewhere. And it's just, so it's, everything's so connected. And effectively, the central banks have lost control. This is really the bottom line. I mean, this idea that the central bank can you know, guide us through the economy nice and smooth, et cetera, it's just a fallacy.
Isn't that what the hard money folks have been looking for maybe four decades or so? That sort of sea change moment where the chaotic system, the tipping point, is reached and there's no return?
That's more or less like the German austerity problem. And it's not the quantity of money. This is the whole problem. They get their ideas from something that's a little bit different. So it becomes, you know, the chicken or the egg question. German hyperinflation by no way, shape, or form did it take place because they simply printed more money. They printed more money as a result of, okay, not the cause. What happened was, there was, which everybody ignores, you know, Germany overthrew its government. They then had a communist revolution in 1918, 1 year after the Russian Revolution. That's the Weimar Republic. And they were even asking Russians to please come in and take over their country. They wanted to join this new communist idea. So anybody who had money hoards it. Okay, so there was no cash in the banks. The government, the Weimar Republic, they defaulted on the debts of the previous government. So they couldn't sell any bonds. So, again, you end up with kind of a perfect storm. Nobody's going to lend the money. They ended up defaulting on the reparation payments, and they had no bond market. And anybody, you know, with half a brain withdrew the money from banks. So that's why you had the hyperinflation. So it's not the hyperinflation first and then causes all the problems. The hyperinflation was the result of all these other problems.
Well, what do you say, Martin Armstrong, to folks who say, you know, today is such a globally connected economic environment that there's too many valves and avenues and stops for the big money, the smart money, the capital, to flow to safe havens? Is that really just an Achilles heel that makes us more open to systemic risk?
Capital has always flowed internationally. I mean, even back in ancient Roman times, you'll find Cicero talking about, you know, when there was a panic about something in Turkey, that was the emerging market, then they sent a panic down the Via Sancta, which was basically the Wall Street of ancient Rome. You have, Grover Cleveland in the panic of 1893. Great speech. I mean, you'll see it on our web. I quote him often. He stands up and he says, look, he says, capital can flee. They can always move their money someplace else. But labor cannot take its labor and export it and put it someplace safe. So the person who always gets hurt the most is the average person. And this is so true. I mean, you have even the governor of New York coming out, so we can't raise taxes anymore. All the rich are leaving. Absolutely. I mean, this is what happens, you know. And if it's going to, well, we're going to charge you 50% here, but wait a minute, if I walk across the street and I go to, you know, across the river to New Jersey, I only pay 25. I think I'll move. You know, this is what's happening. New York used to be the biggest port. There's no port there in New York. You know, I'll move to Philadelphia, then Virginia, because of taxes. So it is connected domestically as well as internationally. And you can't just simply raise taxes all the time, because people do move, and they will definitely move because of it. We are connected, so the global thing has been around for you know, ages. I mean, today it's a little bit more faster than it was before. I mean, you actually had to take gold and put it on a ship and actually move it from London to New York, etc. So today you can do it instantaneously. So the timing of it is shorter. But the whole problem has been under really this idea that began socialism began with Marx. And his whole proposition, which all the other economists have followed, including Keynes, etc., is that government has the power to actually change the economy and do whatever it wants. And that was proven to be completely false because, I mean, communism collapsed. Keynes basically did the same thing. Well, we can, you know, manipulate demand and with interest rates. We raise interest rates, people will not be able to afford to borrow, and we lower them, they'll come back. But he misinterpreted the whole thing as well, and even before he died, he even told somebody, he spent his whole life fighting against Adam Smith's invisible hand, and he says he was wrong, and he hoped that Smith's invisible hand would save Britain. You're going against human nature, and that's the problem. So we tend to look at these things and not quite fully understand, but governments have done nothing but propaganda. I mean, all your pension funds are really, you know, behind the eight ball here. I mean, Social Security, you even take the Obamacare that he put in, the same scheme. Oh, we'll punish youth for not buying insurance when they don't need it. And the insurance companies will get a lot more premium from people they don't have to pay claims to. And therefore, with that more money in the pot, they'll lower the premiums for the people that need it. Well, the insurance companies just pocketed it. It didn't work. You're always trying to steal from one group to give it to another. And that's what just doesn't work. I mean, Social Security is basically kind of collapsing too, because of that same scheme. It's predicated upon population always increasing. Well, population is declining now. Girls don't want to have, you know, babies, etc. I mean, if they do get married and they have less than two children, all right, that's a contraction in the population. So that means you're going to have less workers in the future to pay for the previous generation. So Social Security fails. They never put the money away to begin with. Government pensions, the same thing. They didn't contribute to them. Most of them, okay, work for us and you'll get a pension for life. But they never contributed to it. So this is just taxes. This is why Illinois is going down. California's in such trouble. These are always schemes that politicians come up with, and they sound nice, and it's vote for me, and I'll give you whatever you want. And it will not be sustainable long term.
You know, we look at Orange County, right? Isn't that the casebook, one of the casebook examples now? Memphis, Detroit. I mean, these are sadly, truly sadly, because of the humanity and the socioeconomic costs associated with. However, it sounds like they could be warning shots.
Well, I mean, we published recently, within the last couple of weeks, with the new Gallup poll, which showed that 35% of Americans think the number one problem is government. Typically, when you reach around 45% plus, that's when you start getting into the revolutionary cycle. Even if during the American Revolution, it didn't really cross that 45% mark until Thomas Paine, you know, put out Common Sense. There were people, well, I don't want change. Yeah, okay, fine. And then when he put out his piece on Common Sense, and it is still very common. He basically starts it and says the problem with government is they think they are the sovereign rather than the people. You can see that with Snowden, okay? Snowden basically discovers the government is doing something illegal. He exposes it, okay? Well, he's a traitor. Well, who's he a traitor to? Is it the people, or is it he's ratting on the government? You know, and so it's the government calls treason telling the people the truth that makes them look bad. Isn't the people supposed to be the sovereign? And this is what Thomas Paine explained, and people start looking at it and go, you know, he's right. This is, we're the government. We are the sovereign nation, not the government. So when you reach that point, you're beginning to see it in France with the Yellow Vest movement, etc. They have the highest tax rate in Europe. And they keep raising taxes and taxes and taxes. And, you know, it's the bottom line is, what are people left with for themselves? I mean, yes, it's nice. You can say, oh, we're going to tax the rich. Or does it ever lower anybody else's taxes? No. All it ever does is put more money in their pockets. That's it. Nobody else benefits ever from any sort of proposed tax increase. So it's just really nonsense. And the cost of government has risen so dramatically because they're offering, you know, constantly promising themselves all kinds of pensions, etc. I mean, I moved to Florida. My lawyer, you know. It was maybe a joke, but it was the truth. He says, look, if you die here in New Jersey, tell your family to drag your body across the river before they tell anybody. Because of the taxes.
Our officials are keenly apt, you might say, at keeping this house of cards from imploding, you know, keeping the music going. Because we've just heard for decades, you know, how financial and economic Armageddon is just around the corner. Even 2008, 2009, I mean, think of all the people who ignored equities to buy and hold discounted U.S. equities. But everyone was terrified of U.S. equities at that time. You probably have a good prediction on when and what might bring this whole thing down.
Well, it's starting. Like that poll showing, 35% of the American people think the government is the number one problem. Not global warming, not all this other kind of crazy stuff. Government. So that is showing what I'm talking about. I mean, historically, people are constantly fighting always the last war. So they think, oh, 08, 09, oh, you know, and they're selling the stock market. Who's in trouble here? All right, just ask yourself. I mean, sometimes it's government, sometimes it's the private sector. Okay, yes, in 29, there was, we had, government was not the big brother, per se, and the problem was on the private sector side. This time, the problem is on the government side. And so it depends where you go, who's in trouble. I mean, I have to laugh. People say, oh, the stock market's going to crash and all this stuff. Okay, well, where's the money going to go? You're going to buy government bonds, which everybody is questioning whether or not they're going to be able to pay? And they just look at you with a dumb look. It's like, this time it's a different problem. You know, it flips back and forth historically. I mean, sometimes it's the, you know, the government, then it's the private sector. There was a major sovereign debt crisis in the 1840s, but that time it was the state, not the feds. It changes, but you have to look at this. It's not always the same thing all the time. So the crisis that we're getting into, it looks as though it's going to, it's starting to pop now, and I would say probably from 2020 on, you're going to start seeing a lot more craziness. I mean, but even look at, you know, why did Trump get elected? He beat 17 career politicians. People didn't vote for him because they thought he was the Messiah or the greatest person in history. No, they voted really for him because they were voting against everybody else. And, you know, they don't, it's how you twist it. You take this girl in New York, you know, they call her AOC, okay? And they go, oh, well, they voted for her because they really wanted this new Green Deal and higher taxes, that this is what the people wanted. No, they voted for her for the same reason. They got rid of a Democrat they didn't like who was there for some 30 years or whatever. You see the same thing in Mexico. They overthrew the government there, put in their kind of version of Trump. You see the same thing in Malaysia, France, Italy. I mean, look at Britain with Brexit. I mean, this is a global trend. It is people are getting fed up everywhere with whoever's in government. Okay, it's not a left or right issue. It's because you just look at every country and it's whoever who's ever there, just throw the bums out. So that's the rising tide that is in that Gallup poll, you know, of 35% of the people said the government's the number one problem. You're going to see a lot more civil unrest in the U.S. when we get closer to the 2020 election. Because honestly, at this stage in the game, the House of Cards is falling. Look at what they did to Kavanaugh. You know, if you're going to bring up what happened when you were in high school or, you know, in college, most people can't even remember. And it was really disgusting to watch what they tried to do to him. And that sets the new standard. So then what happens is exactly what followed. Okay, they went after the, you know, Democrats in Virginia. Oh, now there's nothing off the table anymore. The damage of that is that who's going to run? Honestly, I feel Trump is probably the best guy for the job because he's got such thick skin, nobody can hurt him. Who's going to be able to take that many arrows after Trump? Left or right? I mean, I don't really care if you talk about Democrat or Republican. I mean, it's such a degree you have to have an ironclad plaid skin to just to be able to stand up anymore. I don't know who's going to come after him. I mean, it's like, I'm very concerned about that because I don't think the people are going to accept just another career politician who's just going to lie to them all the time. And so what does that give us?
Your Forecaster film did quite well, and I'd be remiss if I didn't inquire into any further projects. I know you've had some on the drawing board for a while.
Yeah, no, they are doing a Hollywood movie. They're turning it into a Hollywood movie. They want to do a another one of the Forecaster, but from concerning Europe and everything else and dealing with it from that perspective. So, but it's just an example of how corrupt the system has become. And it's just really ridiculous. When that film debuted in Amsterdam, the third night we had all the bankers from, you know, all over Europe. You know, and the moderator wanted to pretend he was, like, you know, unbiased. But he says, oh, so did you ever, you know, whatever happened to the $1 billion? You got to keep it? You know, what? And I said, why don't we just ask the audience? I said, is it possible for $1 billion to be missing from a bank and nobody knows where it is? The whole audience starts laughing. I said, you either write a check, you wire it out, or you beam it out like Star Trek. All right, well, take care. Thank you for inviting me.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Top trends researcher, publisher, of course, of the Trends Journal, who joins us today. Welcome back, Gerald Salente.
Thanks for having me on. You know, there's a number of things going on, of course. Everyone's interested in where the markets are going and the geopolitical front. People could hate you on this, hate you on that, but the bottom line is the bottom line. If the economy's going relatively strong, that's a positive for who's ever in office. And they're going to do everything they can to pump this economy up. So the economy's going to be falsely pumped up, and with more monetary methadone, as I said, and then there's no more room, because it's not going to work like it did the last time. It's only going to work temporarily. You're looking already. What happened this past December? Well, home sales in Southern California, one of the hottest markets, they plunged 20%, the lowest pace in 11 years. They couldn't take a 5% 30-year mortgage. So now we're looking at the 30-year mortgage is down to like 4.3-something. And they're going to bring it lower. You're going to see it below 4. So it's going to temporarily boost the markets.
You know, Gerald Salente, I think you make an important point here. I mean, sure, home sales have dropped, but I think you'd probably agree that precipitous decline really mirrors the change in rate expectations. That suddenly we're not going to have maybe quite the GDP output that we expected, and the Fed is wrapping up its rate hiking cycle. If we look forward here, what happens this time around? We never really took all of the QE off the books, did we? Now, the Fed only dropped maybe $1 billion or so of the four total that we saw near the peak, the zenith of their QE operation. So if we've only pulled back, let's say, 20 to 30%, do they really have the wiggle room this time around to tweak the economy?
Again, not like they used to. And again, when they start to do it, that's when you're going to see gold prices really take off, because the world is going to be flooded with cheap, worthless money. And again, the only reason the dollar is staying strong, even though they're being, quote, patient on raising interest rates, is because the other economies are so weak. Where's the euro going to go when they're not going to raise interest rates and they're in negative territory again? Where's the Chinese yuan going to go when they have to throw more money into the system as the economy is going down? So those are your top currencies, and they don't even, as far as the trades, the Forex, they're minor players compared to the dollar. So the dollar stays higher only because the other ones are going so weak. But the reality is they're all growing weak. And then, of course, there's that other element going on. Look at the heating up of conflict in the Middle East right now. What's going on with Israel and Gaza? What's going on with Iran? What's going on with Syria, with Trump announcing that the Golan Heights belongs to Israel, which is against international law, and most of the nations around the world are against it. And you got a guy running for re-election over there, Netanyahu, who's being brought up on corruption charges, and the election's coming right up. So as we say, when all else fails, they take you to war. And then you have what's going on in Venezuela heating up. And if that heats up more, then you're seeing oil prices getting back to the $70 barrel hit. And now you're looking at a global slowdown, costing more to buy energy. And now what's that going to do to retail sales? So the picture isn't very bright. And again, it's only going to be artificially stimulated. So that's what we're looking at. And again, the big one that we're coming out with, and again, these are facts. I mean, I've been on your show. I've been on many shows. We have a magazine, the Trends Journal. We write about it. We've been saying since January, the Federal Reserve is going to lower interest rates. In February, 11% was the guess in the futures funds that they were going to lower rates. Now it's up to over 50%. So they're saying they're going to, over 50% says the Fed's going to lower rates this year. They're just catching up to us. They're not going to lower them one time. They're going to lower them more than one time. And they may even start lowering them without announcing it after their meetings. They may just do it and knock everybody off guard. They need to pump up the equity markets. That is the major signal. And the most important thing to remember is that they always get it wrong. And I'm not making that up. You could look back up the quotes of Ben Bernanke. They never saw it coming. He was the former Fed chair two times ago before Yellen. One time before Yellen and one time before Powell.
But home starts remain strong. So if your thesis of, more accommodative, more dovish rates comes to pass, and the Fed funds futures contracts at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange completely reflect your analysis. They see no rate hikes for all of 2019 into 2020. If that comes to pass and the Fed has finally announced they've wrapped up their rate hiking cycle, could we not see a scenario where U.S. equities post even higher highs sometime this year?
Well, that's our latest trend alert. We said it's going to depend on earnings. And so you may see them going up. But as far as housing starts, yeah, they're up, but they're still relatively low compared to where they used to be. But you're even seeing now with the mortgage rates decreasing to around the 4.45 numbers, in that area, you're seeing weekly mortgage applications going up, nearly 9% on these lower rates. And you're seeing refinancing going up some 12% for the week. And again, that's an 8.5% gain higher than a year ago. Point being, they need cheap money. Cheap money, cheap money, cheap money, and going back to gold. The cheaper money gets, the more value in gold, and our forecast remains exactly the same as it has been now for 6 years, that gold has to break over the 1450 mark for it to gain real strength. We believe when it hits that number,
it'll skyrocket toward the 2000 mark. Having said that, to get there, we believe gold has to break over 1385, and it's been unable to do that as well. So those are the areas that we're looking at.
Jim Cramer certainly shares your thoughts. It really reflects everything he's saying. He's calling for $1,400, even $1,500 gold. He wants it in everyone's portfolio. I mean, here we have, you know, the madman of Wall Street, the pundit of, you know, equities pontification, and he's now a cheerleader for the Trends Journal and Gold Seek. So let's hope he's right. It's interesting to hear some of these Wall Street folks point out the relative value that the yellow metal and related precious metals offer. And maybe that's a segue into the palladium platinum story. My guess is you've kept at least some peripheral vision on this intriguing narrative. Clearly, palladium, which was just a few hundred dollars an ounce several years ago, recently shot above gold for the first time that I'm aware of, almost $1,600 an ounce on, you know, of course, expectations of catalytic converter sales increases in China especially. Do you see that trend continuing, or do you think we've peaked in palladium and platinum?
You know, I don't want to make an assumption, you know, based on just the obvious, because there's always more to it than that, and I'm not really qualified to make that kind of a judgment. I want to go back to gold, though, just one second, about you're seeing the mainstream media now talking about it. You mentioned Cramer. How about the central banks? Last year they bought more gold than they did in 50 years. So if that doesn't tell you where the future's going, then that's, you know.
The Bank of England sold so much near the bottom around 2000, 2001. I mean, they dumped virtually their entire stockpile. I think that was it Gordon Brown? It was one of the big folks who, again, agree with you, but I'd caution folks not to, let's not time our investment purchases on what those folks.
The thing, though, with them is being that they're so, as you mentioned, that they were stupid enough to sell all that gold, they know that there's a problem. And so that they're buying gold, they know that they're aware of this. They know that it's one big Ponzi scheme. You know, they're just watching on because they know that this
dishing out the liquidity, as they call it, or the opioid of choice that you referred to the hungry real estate buyers, to the, you know, student loan and all the rest. I mean, this is just what they'd say is the lifeblood.
We have to look globally, and look what's going on in Australia. The housing market is having one of its worst times since the Great Recession. Their interest rates are only at 1.5%. They're going to lower them. How much room do they have to go? They're not a lot. And then you're looking at the debt load in Australia. United States debt load is nothing compared to it. Nothing. That's what you got. You got the problems that they're global. So once these things start collapsing, once you have a global slowdown, once the banking system, and the banking system in Australia is heavily exposed, they have these principal interest-only loans that are now coming due where you're going to have to start paying principal. So the banks are very overextended there. Italy's in a recession. The numbers coming out of Germany, they're barely missing a recession. You're looking at Japan, one country after another, lousy numbers. They're going to do what they can to juice their economies with more cheap money. So what would you rather have, cheap money or a safe haven asset?
And it also, I think, extends into the cryptocurrency phenomenon. Who ultimately wins when the currency house of cards implodes?
And when this one implodes, we're calling it the Greatest Depression. It's one of our 2020 Trend Vision forecasts that the equity markets are going to be held together this year by the Federal Reserve aggressively lowering interest rates under pressure from the president. And if anybody doesn't think the president has pressure over the Fed, then they haven't read history. It happened under Nixon. It happened under Reagan. And it's happening now. The Federal Reserve, let's not forget, on January 4th, they did a U-turn, a 180. They were going to aggressively raise interest rates this year, and what happened was in December 2018, we had the worst Dow since the Great Depression. And Trump had been harping on Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman, and the Fed, calling them crazy and loco for raising interest rates. And then all of a sudden on January 4th, following economic data that showed growth of over 300,000 jobs, income, wage growth, the best in 10 years for the year of 2018, and rather than saying that they're going to raise interest rates because of the strong economic data, he said they're going to be patient. So what we're saying is this is an election year. It's politics. You don't get to be a higher up in bureaucracies by being your own person. I know this from the inside. I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. I know what it looks like. You get to the top because you bow down and suck up. So when they get pressure on them, they do what they're told. And they're going to be told to lower interest rates. That's our forecast.
I'd also like to touch on the trade war, as they're calling it. While some of our pundits here on the show say it's a non-event, it really doesn't matter until you get into the trillions of dollars goods imports from China. You know, we still are in the middle of at least a cold war, a cold trade war, a cold tariff war between many of our trading partners, at least our top six, Canada included. Is this just a tougher POTUS that is applying, let's say, leadership skills, and maybe we needed that? We needed an anti-globalist republic type of leader. Could this backfire? I mean, might the trade war actually push back on China's and our GDP to a point where manufacturers suffer and jobs suffer and corporate profits wane?
We're among those that say the trade war is more talk than action, in the sense that's really not affecting the global economy. And that's because when you look at the tariffs that Trump put on, it only affects 0.6% of China's GDP, adds up to nothing. And China is they're going to do business. They're not, you know, who would do business under these conditions where you're making all the money and the person you're doing business with is losing all the money? So there's going to be a trade deal. And they're using the trade deal and the tariffs as an excuse for why the global economy is slowing down, rather than the reason it's slowing down was that it was artificially pumped up with negative zero interest rate policy and quantitative easing. So rather than saying that economic fundamentals are behind the slowdown, they're using the excuse of a trade war.
But this is a little off topic. You know, you were good friends with Dr. West and, of course, Zeke West, we knew for over a decade here on the show. Folks who think outside the box seem to gravitate to the Trends Journal. So I have an interesting conundrum I'd like your thoughts on today, if you'd like. Got a little side project working here. We feel very confident that we've intercepted an ancient signal from off this world with some rather interesting results. We presented Dr. Stephen Lieb up in New York and others who were somewhat interested. I'd like your thoughts on whether or not you think something like that could exist.
Well, you know, I mean, what did they say? There are more galaxies than there are grains of sand on Earth. You know, so who knows? You know, we don't know. We don't know about it. I mean, you know, we're so brainwashed into thinking that, you know, the world began, you know, 6,000 years or 10,000 years ago, and that yet they find a skull from, what, 20 million years back. So we don't have a clue. That's my opinion. And we don't have a clue. And we're getting more and more clueless. So I'm open to anything.
You know, what we claim to have found, and you may or may not find interesting, is, believe it or not, there's a audio, we believe, voices, Rosetta Stone-like material, and this came from the Arecibo telescope you may be familiar with, and then sent to Berkeley and Harvard. It's available to the public. There seems to be an SOS, actually the SOS written out with a siren underneath it, and then text in there, images and whatnot that follow. And I guess my question to Gerald Celente is, what might that mean to the public if suddenly all the textbooks had to be tweaked and maybe some of our religious leaders had to reexamine their views?
You know, again, you know, they won't. You know, people are very, very locked into their way of thinking, and they're close to opening their minds. Again, as I said, you know, science discovered, what, a 20-million-year-old skull in Uganda. 20-million-year-old. That was back in 2011. In 2017, 13-million-year-old skull was found. And these things make the news and they get out of the news. As I mentioned, they say there are more galaxies than grains of sand.
I mean, it's not enough to hand people the text, the videos, the audios. We actually think we have a singing hominid. Amazing texts that obviously it's not random noise. There's something here. But you're right. It probably would take a ship or, I guess, a video, wouldn't it, of some talking?
Yeah, they would have to appear on Wall Street.
What would happen to the markets, I wonder, that day? Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's the only thing. If it was walking down Wall Street or landing on Wall Street, then they'll get it.
Exactly, but they'll just think it's someone in suits. All right. I appreciate you at least having the intestinal fortitude to humor that line of thinking, because some of our folks are not inclined to do so. Gerald Celente, why don't you tell people a bit more about the Trends Research Institute?
Well, we have the Trends Journal, our monthly magazine. We do podcasts Monday through Thursday, Trend Vision 2020. Trend alerts go out each week on what's going on in the markets and around the world. And it's only $10.75 a month. And if you can't afford that, because you know a lot of people are having a difficult times, there's a discount request page. Money back guarantee, the only trend magazine in the world, really. And the only place you'll read history before it happens. Money back guarantee if you don't like it. Trendsresearch.com or trendsjournal.com. And, you know, as I said, I'm 71 now. You know, I try to do everything I can to stay loose. And thank you, Chris. And again, thank you for all that you do.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by TradeWind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold. For physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premium. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with Goldseek.com Radio. Attorney General Bill Barr recently released a four-page executive summary highlighting principal conclusions of the long-awaited Mueller Special Counsel Report. What's interesting about this document and the reaction it has generated is that almost without exception, Democrats have cried foul and Republicans have declared victory. Despite reports and assertions to the contrary, I believe there may still be some very large surprises forthcoming when more details of the report are made available. There's just too many escape hatches written into the language of the document itself that are not defined and could open an unseen Pandora's box with punitive consequences for any number, as of yet, unnamed individuals for just about anything. For example, one passage states, during the course of this investigation, the special counsel also referred several matters to other offices for further action. What further action? With whom? Does it involve the president or his family or other business associates? Does it involve Hillary Clinton or her staff, who was given immunity by James Comey ahead of the 2016 election? Then, in the conclusion of this four-page letter, he states once again, separately, I must also identify any information that could impact other ongoing matters, including those that the special counsel has referred to other offices. By no stretch of the imagination is this story over. In fact, Attorney General Barr announced Friday that he will release the full report, less any materials he must legally redact, by mid-April or sooner. He has also agreed to testify in Washington on May 1st and 2nd. Arguably, the Attorney General has become the most powerful person in Washington, at least temporarily, while the final details of this investigation begin to flush themselves out. Barr quoted the special counsel when he wrote, "The special counsel states that while this report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him." That statement alone, coupled with other matters that have been referred to other offices for further action, should tell you of the high probability there is for this issue, this discussion, and frankly, this embarrassment of an investigation, to be infused with a new lease on life and dragged into the 2020 presidential race, which, like it or not, is likely to be a rerun and a relitigation of the 2016 election. So don't hold your breath, because the chances are very high that whatever remnants of credibility remain in the media after this already 2-year debacle, those remnants of credibility will be destroyed in their entirety by the time the next presidential election has concluded. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. OneGold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. OneGold uses VaultChain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by TradeWind. Wind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology.
Vault Chain.
Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs.
As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premium.
OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click.
Vault Chain
offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.